Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your
host,
Sue Bellis, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have a delicious, well, we'll actually have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your community of, well, if not exactly new friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website at www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. We look forward to hearing from you. Okay, now this show's topic is going to be how to be non-judgmental, how to not let your opinions, your personal opinions, influence the way you deal with the participants in your group, how to be a good leader, really, and how to not let your personal judgments get in the way. And I guess the first question we're going to ask is, can we really be truly non-judgmental? You know, it's a hard thing to do. Oh, look, I have lots of participation. Thank you, everyone, for participating. Thank you for coming back. Welcome to the new listeners. And I'm getting kind of, well, let's see, I'm getting about a 50-50 response. I'm getting a lot of no's. You can never be truly non-judgmental. And I'm getting a lot of people that say, yes, you can do that. And I think, and yes, I see that a lot of people have mentioned this already, that, you know, Kevin says that you cannot stop yourself from having an opinion. So, but the thing is that, no, you cannot stop yourself from having personal opinions, can you? But we can stop ourselves from letting them get in the way of our being a neutral third party. After all, we're the host, right? We want to make everyone feel welcome. We want to let everyone have their say, and we don't want to sway the conversation in a direction that has no purpose for moving us forward. You see? That's the idea. We want to keep everybody on the track and moving forward. And yes, even though, and I see several people have already said that, and you're absolutely correct, people have said that Kevin and others and Sajia and like that, and thank you very much for your participation. People have over said that you can have personal opinions. The trick is not saying them out loud. And yes, I think that's true. I think we all, of course, make a judgment. How else will we make decisions? How else will we know something? How else will we be able to lead? How else will we be able to steer the group in the proper direction towards accord, towards conciliation, towards reaching the objective if we don't have an opinion about what to do. But the key is that we need to be careful what we say. You see, you don't have to voice the opinion. The host is the neutral. The host is you. The host is supposed to be neutral. Now we know, and everybody's going, no, you can never be neutral. This is true, and thank you for all of your participation. Yes, you can never, you're never really neutral, but ideally, like a mediator, which is truly what we are when we assume this responsibility, aren't we? We're like mediators. Mediators are impartial third parties, and they might have an opinion, but they're supposed to not let it influence how the outcome of the dispute. The outcome, well, we won't call it even a dispute, the outcome towards reconciliation, towards reaching the common goal, you see? See, always, the key is that you always need to allow everyone to participate fully. And if you're being judgmental, gee, that might not happen. Now, might it not? And Don, oh, this is a good question. Several people have asked this, Don and Calvin and Heather, and thank you very much for your participation. And Don has stated very, very well. He says, what if your opinion is asked for as a group participant? Now, that's a really good point. You are the host, you have gotten the group together, you are impartial and you are non-judgmental, but somebody has said, and what do you think? After all, you're in the room, right? And you're a participant, and you've heard everybody's arguments, you've heard everybody's comments, you've heard what's going on, and then somebody says, and what do you think? Well, what should we do? And I see that Maitar says that we should argue the pros and cons of both sides and not really give a personal opinion. You know, that's a good point. And I'm about to say the sentence that I get a whole bunch of emails, and people say, you always say this, but it applies. And I'm going to say, it depends, right? It depends on the group and who you, as the host, really are in relationship to the group and the participants. Are you an impartial third party who has been called in like a mediator? Then Maitar is absolutely correct. You are going to argue the pros and cons of both sides because it is your job not to take a side. So, and now people are saying, that, but what if I'm part of one of the groups? Well, it depends also. It depends on how why you're there. Have you been asked by both sides because of your great wisdom and the fact that you've been listening to these programs lots? No, I just thought I'd put that in there, yes. You know what? Somebody has reminded me. And by the way, if you are a new listener, thank you very much for coming, and I hope to have you back. All of these shows are indeed archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com, and the last five that were done are archived on the website. The rest of them are archived in the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. You can hear all of the shows, and they've all got titles that tell you what we've talked about. So, because people are saying, you know, this is related to this show, and yes, the shows do indeed follow one another. The topics of the shows are taken from your emails and from the questions that I get during the week so that we know what we'd like to talk about next time. So if you are, to get back to topic, if you have been asked to come as an impartial third party person, even though you might come from one of the different groups, or you might have an opinion concerning one of the groups and the pros that way or the cons, it would be your duty to argue both sides and to be neutral. And a lot of people are asking, but what if you're really not neutral and you haven't been asked in that way? You're the host, but the host next week will be the other person, the other parties. Because oftentimes, of course, we are taking turns, right? This is not a one-time project, and we are taking turns hosting the group. Then you may voice, I think, an opinion, but we're going to be non-judgmental. Now, people go, how can you have an opinion? Here's the question that I'm getting lots. How can you have an opinion and not have it be a judgment? Well, I suppose, and yes, this is being pointed out to me, this is absolutely true. I am using the word judgmental in a negative, aren't I? Because I am saying, well, you shouldn't be judgmental. I'm using it in a negative because I am thinking, of course, of a situation where making an overt judgment that you state to the group, or you feel in your heart even, but you state to the group, will cause you to be on one side or the other and will change the tenor of the meeting. It will change the dynamics of it, you see? Because you're the person that's supposed to be the leader for this evening, at least, for this time, for this gathering. And the leader leads forward and not, it leads everyone forward and not one group in front of another group, you see? And Calvin says that he, and several people have also said that, they say that in order, if you've been asked your opinion as a group participant, that you should tell the group when you've been asked that it's inappropriate for you to respond. Now, I have indeed done that when I've been, it's a really good point, thank you. I have done that when I have been acting as truly an outside third party impartial mediator, impartial participant. I'm an outsider, I'm a third party, but you, of course, might form an opinion, even if you've never, if you're a true impartial outsider, from sitting there, right? You've listened to the argument, you think one side is more valid than the other. But it is, you could respond that it is inappropriate for you to voice an opinion, you see? And Calvin and others have said that if you're going to, that it's always neutral, the host, the mediator, is always neutral, or you lose the ability to lead. That depends as, I know I've said that depends again, but it does. It depends on whether or not you're truly a third-party neutral. I think if there's going, if you've gotten into a case where there's an argument and things are getting heated and you don't like the way the conversation is going because you think that it's not going to lead to accord and it's going to lead to dissension and the and you're not going to stay on the path and move forward towards the common goal, I think it's appropriate oftentimes to say that you don't want to voice an opinion because you're the host. And then you could even have each side summarize their opinion if, in your judgment, you see, your private judgment, there is a party from each side who is capable of doing that. They have to be people who are reasonable and, I would say, fairly well-spoken. You don't want people who are going to go long-winded on you and just get wound around and cause dissension, you see? And also, of course, they have the concept of when we need to take a break, we have a little snack break, don't we? We have a food break. We have a convivial atmosphere break. We might even talk about a subtopic and get back to the main topic at hand, you see? It's all rather a dance, isn't it? We all kind of work our way around. But yes, we want to be non-judgmental in our leading of the group. And Mitar says that you should judge not lest ye be judged. Actually, this is actually true, and it's a good point, and of course it's a very old concept. It's a very old mediation concept, come to think of it. But if you think about it, and quite a few of you have, thank you for all the participation. It's very, I love hearing from you, and it's very interesting. I always learn something when I do one of these shows, and I hope you do too. So let's think about judge not lest ye be judged. Thank you, Mitar. It is a very good point. And one of the things one has to realize when you are dealing with other people, even in not one of these gatherings where we're trying to reach an accord, is that all of the participants are going to have a personal opinion about you. Yes, they are. I mean, we're all humans, and we're all thinking thoughts and judging the other people in the room, aren't we? And the trick is that you want their negative judgments not to get in the way either, you see? And Cindy says you need to recognize your own biases and their influence as well as other people's biases. Yes, you know, of course, we have indeed talked about, in prior shows, we have indeed talked about prejudice and about the self-centered attention grabber and like that. And it is very important. I see a lot of you bringing in cultural biases. And that does play a role, doesn't it? And one must be very careful, we must be very careful, to think about ourselves so so that we don't let biases create judgments that are not validated by what is before us. We don't want to act in a, well, in a stereotypical manner, do we? We don't want to rush to judgment before we have seen the facts, before we have seen heard the participants. Very important to think about your own biases and whether or not they are causing you to make judgmental decisions and behaviors. Because if you do such a thing, like all behaviors, I'm afraid, especially like the negative ones, it's kind of contagious, isn't it? Yes, I've had several people say that if you let your judgments show, that it will influence the group because everyone will recognize it. Yes, it's Andrea says that your judgments teach you something about yourself. And I guess that's the core of it, isn't it? Your judgments teach you something about yourself. And that's always an interesting thing to learn. You need to think about your underlying biases, and well, we all have them, even the finest of people. But you've got to think about them and work around them and say, no, I will not jump to judgment. I will not have a personal opinion that is not warranted, you see? And the key to all of this, yes, I see people are saying things like you don't want to voice a judgment. I think the key to it is you don't want to voice especially a negative judgment. You don't want to voice disapproval. If, first of all, that would be a bad thing because you are the host. That will cause an atmosphere of disapproval. And I see that most of you are saying that if you make an atmosphere of disapproval, it will rapidly become acrimonious. It will rapidly disintegrate into a rather difficult to control group experience. And we work so hard to make a convivial atmosphere, don't we? Yes, we do. And, you know, Margaret has a very good point. She says that we're using judgmental as a negative word, and I've just said that we are. This is true. And she says that what if the judgment is positive about another person? It's a good judgment. You have a personal opinion that's very, very favorable. And I'm all in favor, of course, of being positive and being approving, yes. Make certain that when you do such a thing, when you have a positive judgment, that you are going to voice a positive approval. I'm very fond of positive reinforcement. We all know that. That you haven't taken sides because a positive towards one might be a negative towards the other. Do you see that? Yes, I see a lot of people are agreeing that you need to be careful about voicing even a positive judgment, a positive judgmental thought, because it needs to be a group positive reinforcement and not a reinforcement towards one side or the other, because a positive reinforcement towards one will be seen by the others as negative towards them because they didn't get the positive. Do you see how that works? It is human nature to think that. And it will happen. So yes, I am very in favor of positive reinforcement. We have heard this, we have discussed this, and it is a very good thing. But I think from experience that you need to be positive towards everyone and not just towards one group. Don't, if you bring one group up, for example, as a good example to the others will inherently get the idea, even if you didn't really mean it, that they are the opposite of the good example, which would be, yes, everybody's writing in a bad example, yes, which would be a bad example, and that is not good. That's not impartial. Jason says you should consider the basis for the judgment, the why of your own and others' judgmental behavior. You know, that's really it. That's when we've talked about bias and prejudice and stereotyping before in other shows. And it is important to think about that. And I see a lot of people are saying that there's cultural, judgmental behavior is cultural in its basis. Sometimes it is, I suppose this is cultural, but more of a group thought. It is a group culture or even a corporate culture. I have seen corporate culture that is really, really ingrained in people's minds. And it has nothing to do with their personal outside beliefs or faith or culture or ethnicity. It has to do with corporate culture. And you'll see that. You'll see organizational culture. And you have to think about it. You have to think about the basis and where it's coming from. And you have to think about that in ourselves, too. I try to think about that when I'm before I open my mouth, when I've got a group together. I try to think about my own biases. Everyone has some. And whether or not I am making a judgment prematurely, whether I have a judgment that's not valid in this particular instance. And Catherine has made a good point, and it's a very valid one. She says the judgmental behavior doesn't have to be spoken to be obvious. You can make a judgmental physical gesture that everybody understands is negative and judgmental. You can even make a positive one. That everyone understands is positive towards one side, which, as we've just discussed, is deemed, at least, negative towards the other. How about patting someone on the back after they say something in an affirmative manner? And that's patting them on the hand, you see. That's an affirmation. That's a judgment. And, we've got lots of people, oh my goodness, we've got lots of people telling me about behavior that is not spoken, that is judgmental. Thomas is pointing out that rolling your eyes is a real good one. You ever seen anybody do that? They roll their eyes and look towards the heavens because they're just so disgusted. Yes, rolling your eyes is very, very lovely. Maria says that people snort. Now, I can't remember ever seeing anybody actually snort, but I'm certain that that happens, and she says that it happens lots. I'm sorry. yes, that is a judgmental behavior, and like two-year-olds would do such a thing in this. Ruben and several other people, we've got quite a few people that are saying that laughing is a judgmental behavior. And I will assume that that is not a positive laugh. It is a sarcastic one. And they're saying, yes, it is. That I'm laughing at somebody is a judgmental behavior. Quite a few people have seen people get up and walk away. Yes, they get up and at least walk to a different part of the room and turn their back and start to text or something because they are showing their disapproval in a judgmental way. And yes, I know there's several people that are followers of the show, and I'm really grateful to have you. Thank you for coming every week. And they advocate, and we've talked about this before, and I don't do it, but it is a perfectly valid thought. They advocate confiscating mobile devices so that you can't start to text or walk away or make a phone call or look at your emails or something while someone else is talking. And I don't generally do it, but it is a really valid thought, and we get a lot of people that think that it's helpful. Nancy says sighing. Yes, big, big dramatic sighs. And then we've got the co-response to the texting and like that, where we have people that start a side conversation. You know, when I see people start a side conversation, let's talk about what to do about these things. People are saying, well, what should we do about these things? Don't just list them. You have a very good point there. I generally, if I see that that's happening, okay, if you start a side conversation, I actually will act like a third grade teacher, and I will say, could we please have only one conversation in the room? You see? And usually that will stop it in its tracks. If I've got people that keep doing it, and they don't get the, well, that's more than a hint, isn't it? When you actually say, please, may we have not more than one conversation in this room, and well, you use a non-spoken indication. You kind of stare at them, and, you know, you too. If that doesn't work, generally speaking, which is why we have the buffet, we have the food in the room, we take frequent breaks so that we can get up and stretch our legs and be convivial and like that. General, sometimes if you have people that keep doing it, I will actually separate them. Just like a third grade teacher, if I can't get somebody who's my co-host who understands the process to sit in between them, I will change seats and sit in between them. I'll move their stuff over one. It's a real good hint. What do you think of that? Yes. Yeah, people are saying that they ask people to stop, and they, well, this is a concept. Stuart says that, and I see several other people doing similar things, that they have a penalty box. If you do something that is distracting, you owe the group a dollar towards the beverages and stuff, towards the next collection, like a collection box, like a fine. Well, that is an idea, and thank you for putting it in, and thank you for telling us. That's an interesting idea. I've never done it. I can see, I told you I always learn something from these conversations. I hope you do too. I've never had a penalty fine, so to speak, for an infraction. He says it's done in good humor, and that there's a big fish bowl in the middle where you all add to the where you donate to the pot, so to speak. A collection is taken, like $5 or something. Yes, he says 10. Hey, inflation rules. And if you violate the politeness rule, which he's got a politeness rule, which we all have, of course, you owe the kitty a dollar. Well, yeah, if it works, it works. You know that I am in favor of whatever works. If it's done in good spirits and people will really do it, that seems like a good idea, because it does keep things going smoothly and keeps the meeting flowing, so to speak. So, yeah, I see several of the people that have done that, and they say it's a very good idea and it keeps everybody's mind on the topic, because no one wants to donate more money. Well, it depends on your group, of course. But, yeah, that's an interesting tip. Thank you for telling us, because that's an interesting tip, to have kind of a whispering, snorting, laughing, spitting fee to keep everybody focused. I like it. I think that's an interesting thought, to keep the side conversations down. If you see that people are getting up and walking away, which we have quite a few people are asking about that, you can decide on the moment what it is that is appropriate. I see several people have answered the question, and they're saying that you can ask people to return. Yeah, you can. That might work. It depends. Oh, there, I used it depends again. It depends on the situation and on the person's, and on, I suppose, your judgment, hey, of the person's personality and whether or not they really will come back and not be disruptive. If you see that people are getting a wee bit agitated and they're kind of watching the person that wandered off and like that, it might be time to call a timeout, to call a break, to go have, I don't know, a nice dish of food, a glass of wine, go to the bathroom, whatever it is, so that personalities cool. You see, I don't like to say tempers cool, because we'll assume that we're not really fighting, but so that everything kind of smooths over and cools down. And then the person who has gotten up and wandered off can, without losing face, come back to the group, because we've all gotten up and wandered around, and we're all sitting back down, you see? And you might even approach the person who had gotten up and make them feel that their opinion was duly noted and now it's time to get back down to business. In, of course, a gracious manner. Right? Right. And, Jacob says that I see quite a few other people saying that they see a lot where people refuse to allow other people to finish their discussion. It's someone's turn, and this person refuses to allow them to finish it. They butt in, so to speak. We had an entire show on this, but the thing to do is to set some rules. You are the host. And if you're getting that quite a bit with this group, or even with a person in the group, you're getting a lot of people that are kind of butting in on each other and nobody's getting anywhere, you can say who has the floor. And I personally, and you've heard me say this before, I personally and oftentimes will use one of those kitchen timers so that people have 2 minutes. And you can see it and hear it, and everybody knows that they've gotten the same 2 minutes that everybody else has gotten 2 minutes, so there's no preference, right? Right. And you can see it so you know how long you've got left. And when it dings, it's someone else's turn, and we'll get back to you. You see, we go round, and I've actually in my day made people raise their hands. If you've got a group that's, we'll call it exceedingly enthusiastic in their discussions. Yes, refusing to allow people to finish is very kind of common. Things get, no one gets to really voice their opinion because everybody's voicing theirs at the same time. That's not the way to make accord. And let's see what other kind of judgmental, non-spoken activities we have. Oh, well. We really, people, my goodness. We have quite a few people who have listed something that I will call, this is a family radio show, I will call non-hygienic. Something rather distracting that gets everyone's attention, that they are making a non-spoken judgment about what someone is saying. Yes. Some of these have to do with finger motions. Kind of common finger motions. Yes. That we would not like to even see on the road. When you have that, that is truly overtly rude behavior. And some of this is less overt than others of this. But when you've got that kind of behavior, it is time for a timeout and a reiteration of the rules of politeness, right? Now, if you have a group that you think, even if you don't, I have a rules of politeness list that changes in my email to the potential participants. I send out the rules of politeness about taking turns and about about coming on time and like that. If I judge, I suppose that is a judgment, but of course I would never say out loud, I think you're a group of people who don't know how to act politely, and therefore I am sending you this. No, it is extremely politely done, and ahead of time you might set out some rules of behavior, like, for example, the use of the kitchen timer and letting everyone finish for us all to follow. And quite frankly, non-spoken judgmental behavior that is overtly rude is, you don't have to send that out ahead of time. You can stop and say, we are not children here, and we will act in a civil manner towards each other. I have indeed, in my day, when things get kind of odd like that, I have indeed asserted my power as leader and said that something is inappropriate behavior. I see that people, I've got quite a few people that say that they would evict the person and bar them from coming again. That depends. It depends how important the person is to the process, not how important they are in their own mind, but how important they are to the process, how much you need them there is what I'm saying. And it depends if the overt behavior was for the purpose of being thrown out. Do you understand? Sometimes people want to disrupt the process and they want to leave, so they want you to throw them out. You see? Let's see, have I ever done it? All right. I once had a corporate, an actual corporate dispute, a workplace dispute, that was so heated, and I knew it ahead of time that it was really so heated, and it had gotten so acrimonious before I got there that the sides had somewhat solidified. They truly despised each other, and I thought that they might actually come to blows. We might actually have a problem like that. And I did, yes, thank you. Several people have said, we told you this before. Yes, this is true. Several people have in the past said that they actually have an off-duty police officer, for example, in attendance, actually hired to be there if they think that the group is going to be really bad news and really become violent. I had corporate security on call and kind of standing outright outside the door and let everybody know and like that. If you've got a group that really needs that, I try never to really eject anyone, because if they're there, they're part of the process and need to be part of the accord, you see? So that is for you to decide at the time. Where people really do something overtly rude, and you're thinking about removing them. I see quite a few people are saying not on the first overtly rude. That's a good point. It depends if you can't get them to stop, if you can't control them at all. You might have to rethink who is important to the process. Okay. Yes, Rosanna says that sometimes it's the host that needs the time out. This is true. Sometimes I need the time out because we're human and we get frustrated too, don't we? You see? And she says sometimes she gets up and walks off. Well, that would indeed be a signal to the group, wouldn't it? You would have to know that that's going to be a positive signal to the group to behave, because they've annoyed you and frustrated you. and not an act that will cause the group to dissolve. You see, the leader doesn't lead anymore for a minute there, and it all kind of goes well, doesn't go well. I don't think I've ever actually done it, but it is an idea, depending on how intransigent it has gotten. But that's why, you know, that's why it's not, we don't, Recipe for Peace Now does not use food just because we're hungry, right? And because we want to swap recipes, although that's very fun. But we use, and you know, we tend to do it at dinner time. We might be hungry. But that's not really the point of it, right? The point of it is to create a distraction, really, isn't it? It's because we want to create a convivial atmosphere, and we want to be able to do something to switch gears to keep the focus from going off the track in a way that is pleasant and available and that everybody likes, which is why we have breaks, we have timeouts, we go have a, I don't know, we go have a nice cola, a nice glass of wine if it's not against anybody's prohibitions. And like that, it helps. It makes us all be able to have a deep breath and a think while we are having, I don't know, a dish of something nice. You see, it's not really a cooking thought. It's a we will not do inappropriate behavior thought. See, and Stephen says you can also have frequent breaks even if it's not specifically for food. This is true. I mean, you know, people are saying things like bathroom breaks and like that. Yeah, it's just a way to get people to move forward and not to have an argumentative stance that they've taken and they're solidifying and they can't get out of. You see, it's not so much because we're. It's really to make a party-like atmosphere because food is a great leveler and everybody likes it. But it also gives people a way to do something and to save face and not have to keep fighting, you see? Not have to keep insisting and getting more heated. It's a way to have a time out without having to send anyone to the corner, you see? All right, now, this probably means that we've now reached the food portion of the show, right? Right, yes, people are going, where are the recipes? Good. And now I know that those of you who have been with me for a while have heard me say this, and those of you who have seen me in a workshop or even made a speech or whatever, and I always say this, but I'm going to say it again because I need to say it constantly. It's very, very important. If you're going to have a potluck, or even if you're going to have it catered, you need to tell everybody in advance, and you need to do it yourself, and you need to really enforce this. The food needs to be labeled. It needs to be labeled not just what is it, as like it's beef stew, but it needs to be labeled as to what's in it, because there are people who have dietary restrictions, religious restrictions about food, and allergic reactions to food. And you don't want to make anyone sick, and you don't want to make anyone horrified or panicky or offended or anything bad. This is supposed to be a good experience. See, and there's no cheating. If you've got vinegar in it, you've all heard that I have a friend who's allergic to vinegar. That's a condiment. Put that down. You know, put it in. That's in there. It's very important. And also, of course, when you're getting your groups together, but although sometimes you get people who've been brought as extras, but when you do your emailing and your phone calling and like that, you will ask if people have an allergic reaction to some sort of food, a religious or dietary prohibition. Yes, yes. And you know, of course, that it is my opinion that you as the host, that we as hosts, need to bring extra, and so that there's plenty of food, and that we should have what I call a safe recipe. Now, what makes this recipe safe? Well, in my opinion, it's that it looks like what it is. You can basically see most of the ingredients, and that there is a good chance that a lot of people will not be unable to eat it. Excuse me. And the two recipes for today, well, I don't know that either one of them is really an adventure recipe. An adventure recipe, at least the way I use the term, is a recipe that the food has ingredients that are somewhat unusual and people might not be familiar with them. You see? So, we're going to start with what I have called the safe recipe today. And our safe recipe is going to be a lovely and a very basic beef stew. And because it's basic, of course, you can make it as spicy as you'd like. You can add things. I've seen people add actual jalapenos to beef stew. But if you're going to do such a thing, we must, oh, people are putting in, are writing the word label all over the place. Yes, we must label it, and we must say that that's what's in it. And you all know that I think that if you're going to want to spice something up with an ingredient like that, it is best to have the basic stew and then to bring the, what I will call a condiment, separate and put it out separately so people can choose. That always works out better, and it will make a meal, and it will make a treat that most people can eat. And if you like it really spicy, you can put 2 tablespoons of jalapenos in there and tip the bowl for the juice, you know, but most people don't particularly. Okay, so this is the beef stew. It's a very basic beef stew, and it's very good, and it is the kind of thing you can make the night before and feed your family, just make extra, and then put it in the fridge and then bring it and reheat it, which is, in my book, very excellent. So, and of course, if you're going to do that, you need more food than this. But I'm going to give you a basic. It's a nice big pot, and you'll decide how many people you're feeding. Okay? We're going to have about 6 pounds of boneless chuck roast, and we're going to cut it into nice cubes, about 1.5-inch cubes. And we're going to have 3 tablespoons of oil, 2 onions, which we're going to coarsely chop, 4 carrots. We're going to peel them and cut them into about an inch lengths, about inch pieces. 4 stalks of celery that we're going to chop. 3 cloves of garlic that we're going to mince. Yes, I do put garlic into everything. People have said that. Yes, I see people saying it now. And if you don't like garlic, you can leave it out, but I think it leaves a lovely taste. 4 cups of beef stock. And if you like, and if not, if you have prohibitions, and you think this will make it be less appealing to people, you can put in more beef stock, which would make it about 4.5 cups, 5 cups of beef stock. I like to put in 1 cup of dry red wine because it's delicious, and it gives it an underpinning of flavor. If the wine, the alcohol part of it will cook off, I understand, so it shouldn't be a prohibition, but some people don't like any kind of alcohol at all, because of religious or whatever kind of prohibitions. So you need to know that about your people, and it needs to be labeled. So 4 cups of beef stock, 1 cup of red wine, or 5 cups of beef stock if you're leaving out the wine. And then we're going to make one of those cheesecloth knotted bags of herbs, because we're going to want to pull them out. And if you don't put them into a square of cheesecloth and knot them, it'll be a chore to fish them out with a slotted spoon. So in our cheesecloth, so we can get rid of it later, we're going to put about 3 sprigs of rosemary, about 4 sprigs of flat-leaf parsley, a couple of bay leaves, and I like about 4 peppercorns. So we're going to make an herb bag, right? So we're going to fish it out later. Okay, now let's get started. We've got our ingredients. We're going to preheat the oven to 350. And we're going to sprinkle those cubes of beef with some salt and pepper. And we're going to take 2 tablespoons of the oil and in a one of those big, they're called Dutch ovens, aren't they? One of those big covered pots. We're going to sear the beef on all sides until it's brown. Please do not ignore this step. I've seen it, and it's not a pretty picture. If you don't sear the beef, which is kind of an extra step, it will not be pretty. And we all know that we eat with our eyes before we eat with our tongue, right? And it will, the beef will be tough like shoe leather because the searing keeps the moisture in, it keeps the juice in. So we're going to take our beef, we're going to sear it in the oil, just on the bottom of the pan we're about to use. And we're going to now take the beef and we're going to put it aside because we're going to work with the remaining oil and the onions, the carrots, and the celery, and we're going to saute that whole thing until they get softened and the onions get kind of translucent and like that. And then we're going to add the garlic after the onions turn translucent and the vegetables start to soften. Now that we've got the vegetables and the garlic and some oil in the bottom of the pan, we're going to add the stock and the wine, or just the stock. You'll have to add the wine. The stock and the wine, and we're going to stir it real good, and we're going to kind of scrape around the bottom of the pot to get all the nice, yummy bits off. It'll also help when you go to wash this pot. But we're going to get everything into the middle, into the stock, into the juice, into the stew. Right? Now we're going to add the meat back in. We're going to add the meat, and I always like to pour any kind of juice that came off the meat because it's been sitting in a platter. And now we're going to add our bag of herbs, too. We're going to cover the pot, and we are going to braise it in the oven for about 2.5 hours. And I like to stir the stew occasionally just to make sure that everything is incorporated and everything's good. And it will make a lovely stew if you do this. So, it's very easy. We sear the meat, we take it out, we put the vegetables in, we saute them, we add the garlic, we add the stock and the wine, we add the herbs, we add the meat back in, we put it back in the oven for 2.5 hours or until the whole thing is tender and it's stew. And I like to stir it several times. And that's it. It's wonderful. It's easy to do. You can keep it refrigerated overnight and bring it. And everybody likes it. And it's delicious. That's my safe recipe. It's even safer if you take the wine out. A little less tasty, I might argue. And if you tie the herbs in a bag, you will be happier. I've forgotten in my day and had to fish them out. It's not wise. Ran out of cheesecloth. Okay, now let's have our adventure recipe. I'm going to call this the adventure recipe, even though it's not as adventurous as some of the ones we've done in the past, because it has, I like to make it with pork, with half ground pork and half ground meat, and it is not as obvious what is in it as in the other recipe. Pork is something that a lot of people don't eat, depending on the group. So you do have to check that out. And if you want to be safer, you will make it with meat. If you want to be safer still, and you have a lot of people who don't eat meat, they don't eat red meat, which probably means they don't eat pork either, which is a dietary consideration, I think, although pork is often a religious one. If they don't eat meat or pork, you could do this with ground chicken. I don't recommend it. it's just better if you use actual pork or actual beef. It's okay. You can use ground chicken if you must. It is not as good a consistency, but it can be done. Yes. People say that's not a substitute for beef or pork. Well, okay. So let's think about this. This is going to be the pasta and eggplant pie. And it is just wonderful. And it is very pretty. Everybody looks at it and goes, wow. You can make it ahead of time. But of course, if you're going to feed your family with it the night before, you make two of them because you want to bring a whole pie to the potluck, to the gathering, because it is so impressive. And then it doesn't look like leftovers. Yes? Yes. Okay. So we're going to make one pie with this. If you've got more people, you will, of course, make two. It's just, you know that, yes. So we're going to take three eggplants, and we're going to slice them real thin lengthwise because we're making long strips. And, yes, we're going to leave the skin on. People have already asked that. Skin on. Yes, we're actually going to leave the skin on. And we're going to have two chopped onions, two garlic cloves that we're going to crush, a pound and a half to 2 pounds of ground either pork or beef or chicken. I like to do half and half pork and beef because I think it's more tasty. Somebody says, can you use lamb? I do not see why you can't use lamb. Yes. Andrea says, can I use lamb? Thank you. It's a good point. Yes, I don't see why not. Yeah, that would be delicious. Okay, where was I? On the ground beef. We're going to have one of those big cans of tomatoes, like a 15-ounce can of tomatoes, the crushed kind, not the whole ones. 2 tablespoons of tomato paste, 3/4 of a cup of frozen peas, 1 cup of grated mozzarella, and 1 cup of grated cheddar cheese. Hello, grated cheddar cheese. And a beaten egg, an egg that we've beaten. Okay. Now picture this. It's going to make a pie, right? So we're going to make the crust of the pie with eggplant, with the eggplant slices. So we're going to take one of those 9-inch round springform tins that you really do use for like pies and things. And you're going to use the springform because otherwise it won't come out in one piece and it won't look so nice. So we're going to take a springform pan and we're going to, first of all, well, we might as well preheat the oven, right? We're going to preheat the oven to 350. Then we're going to take the springform pan, the 9-incher, and we're going to grease it and we're going to line it with the slices of eggplant and we're going to, did I say macaroni in here? Did I say macaroni? No, I probably didn't. People say no. They've written it down, and I, for heaven's sakes, thank you for telling me. You're going to need, hello, you're going to need 1 pound of macaroni, 1 pound of dry macaroni, which we're going to boil to make macaroni out of, right? We're going to add the macaroni to a large pan of rapidly boiling water and cook it until it's al dente. Well, that's kind of a little bit hard, but cooked through. We're going to drain it and set it aside. I'm sorry. I didn't realize I didn't put the macaroni. My apologies. People say, you didn't say anything about pasta. No, it's called pasta and eggplant pie, and I didn't say anything about pasta. Hello. There's going to be 1 pound of macaroni involved, and we're going to cook it al dente and put it aside. We're going to leave it in the colander and just let it drain so it doesn't make our pie watery. So we're lining the greased pan with the eggplants. We've got our cooked macaroni sitting over there to the side in the colander. And let's look at this. I'm reading it because that's how I forget things, because I read it and then I go, oh, I start to talk. You're so right. Andrea says she's made this, and I forgot to say to sprinkle the eggplant with salt and let it stand for 20 minutes. You have to get the water out of the eggplant. She's right. So we've got the pan. We've greased it. And we're going to prepare our eggplant to put into it. We're going to cook the eggplant in batches, right? Beep, 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 beep. Yes. Let me think about this. This is a recipe that was sent in by a listener. I haven't made this in a couple. Yeah. We're going to do the... Hello. Yes, I did read this beforehand, didn't I? I wrote it. We're going to put the eggplant and we're going to fry it in a little bit of cooking oil in batches until it's really nice and brown on each side. And then we're going to drain it. The key to all of this is draining everything. Because if you don't drain it, you're going to get a watery pie and it's going to fall apart. Have I done that? Yes, I have. And it's not half as pretty. So we've got the eggplant that has now been fried on both sides and drained in the oil, fried in the oil and drained. And then we're going to drain them on a paper towel. Then we're going to add the onion and the crushed garlic to the same pan that we used for the eggplant. And we're going to stir them over a low heat until they're soft. Then we're going to add the meat, and we're going to brown it in that same pan. We're going to brown it and make sure there are no lumps. And then we're going to add the crushed tomatoes, the whole can, undrained. That's the only liquid we're going to leave in. And then we're going to add the tomato paste. We're going to bring the whole thing to a boil, and we're going to simmer it for about 20 minutes. Now, I know that this takes a little while, but it's worth it, because we're going to do the macaroni and set it aside, and we're going to have this, and we're going to set it aside. And then we're going to take the peas, the macaroni, we're getting to the macaroni, right? And the cheeses, and the egg, and we're going to mix them. I'm going to set that aside. Mm-hmm. Now, we've got our eggplant slices that we've already prepared, and we've lightly fried in the oil on both sides, and we've let them drain so that they're not soggy. And now we're going to make the crust. We're going to put them in the bottom of the tin and arrange them in overlapping pattern on the base and the sides so that we make the crust of the pie. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to take the filling. We're going to take the meat mixture and we're going to combine it with the macaroni mixture. And they're going to spoon it into our eggplant crust. Actually, you have to spoon it in kind of carefully, otherwise you misarrange the eggplant. And you're going to pack it all down really well. And if you've got some remaining eggplant slices, which you will, you're going to put them and layer them over the top so that it looks nice and pretty and it's a closed pie. And now we're going to take this whole thing, which we have the eggplant on the bottom and the sides, and then the meat and macaroni mixture in the middle, and then the eggplant on the top to make the top of the crust. And we're going to bake it uncovered for about half an hour until the whole thing turns really nice and brown and looks beautiful. And I think you should let it rest for about 10 minutes before you unmold it. Because quite frankly, it looks gorgeous when it comes out in one piece. And it's wonderful and it makes a pie and you cut the slices. And it's just yummy because you've packed it down really firm. And you've drained the macaroni and the eggplant really well. You see, so that it didn't get watery. And when it comes out in one piece, This is the adventure part, yes. When it comes out as a solid pie, it's magnificent. When you undo the spring form and it kind of sags, it's still delicious. People are thinking, David, have you had that happen? Yes, I have, as a matter of fact. You know what Andrea says, and this is a really good tip. Thank you. I always learn something. This is a very good idea, and next time I will actually do it. She says that if you take the eggplant crust, so to speak, the eggplant before you put the mixture in, and if you sprinkle it with some extra cheese all the way around, it will hold the crust better and make it glue together better. I bet that's true. Thank you very much for telling me that. And thank you for reminding me about the macaroni. I'm looking at it and going, yes, I didn't say macaroni, did I? So it makes a really lovely pasta and meat mixture inside the eggplant crust. And it is really lovely. And everybody likes it, and it's very impressive. So that's the adventure recipe. I think the adventure is the part where you open the springform pan, come to think of it. No, I said it was an adventure recipe because if you use pork, you might have some prohibitions, and you might have prohibitions about red meat. But we have now reached the end of our show. Thank you very, very much for listening. Thank you for coming. Thank you to the returning people. Thank you to the new ones. If you would like to get in touch with us, we are at recipeforpeacenow.com. The shows are archived on that website, the last five. The others are all archived on the radio station itself, blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. And if you'd like to email us, it is recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Thank you for coming, and I hope to have you come again next week where we'll have a different discussion. Thank you. Bye-bye.